computer. McQuillan's would have come up. How do you deal with the time discrepancy? He was casing the place. The witness saw that. He didn't see when McQuillan came back. Ryder nodded. What about the marks on Irving's shoulder? Can they be matched to McQuillan's watch? It's possible, but it won't be conclusive. We might get lucky and even find DNA on the watch. But I think the big hole here is Irving. Why was he at the hotel in the first place? The McQuillan angle relies upon chance. Taxi driver sees Irving. He tells McQuillan. McQuillan's deep-seated anger and bitterness take over. At the end of shift, he grabs a set of mechanic's coveralls and goes to the hotel. He climbs up the side, somehow gets into Irving's suite, and chokes him out. He strips the body and folds the clothes nice and neat, but misses the button on the floor. He then drops him off the balcony, and it looks like suicide. It works well enough in theory, but what was Irving doing there? Was he meeting someone, waiting for someone? And why did he put his stuff, his wallet and phone and everything, in the room safe? If we can't answer those questions, we've got a hole big enough to drive a getaway car through. She nodded in agreement. So, what are you proposing we do now? We do nothing. I continue to work this. But you have to know, and the chief has to know, that as this goes forward, it's going to get close to the councilman. If I squeeze Robert Mason to find out why he started pulling over B&W drivers, it might come back directly to Irvin Irving himself. The chief should know that.
He will. Is that your next move?
I'm not sure yet, but I want to know as much as there is to know before I take on McQuillan. Ryder stood up. She was impatient to go.
Are you going back now? She asked.
No, I think I'm going to make a few phone calls, Bosch said.
All right, Harry. Good luck. Be careful out there.
Yeah, you too. Be careful up there. She looked at him. She knew he meant on the 10th floor of the PAB. She smiled, and he smiled back. Chapter 20. Bosch sat back down on the bench and composed himself. He then pulled his phone and called Hannah Stone's cell number. She had given it to him when they had parted ways the evening before. She answered right away, even though Bosch's number was blocked.
It's Harry Bosch.
I thought it might be you. Is there anything new?
No, I'm working on something else today. But my partner is trying to run down the guy Chill.
Okay.
Anything new on your end?
No, just doing the same good work we always do.
That's good.
There was an awkward pause, and then Bosch plowed ahead.
My daughter is studying at a friend's house tonight, so I'm free, and I was wondering... I mean, I know it's pretty soon, but I wanted to see if you wanted to have dinner again tonight.
It's no big deal. It's short notice.
No, it's not that. It's just that we have sessions on Wednesday and Thursday nights, and I'm supposed to work tonight.
Don't you get a dinner break?
Yes, but it's too short. Tell you what, can I call you back?
Yes, but you don't have to jump through any...
I want to, but I have to see if somebody will switch with me. I take tomorrow night if they take tonight. Can I call you back?
Sure.
Bosch gave her his number, and they disconnected. He got up, patted Charlie Chaplin on the shoulder, and headed out the door. When Bosch got back to the unit, Chu was working on his laptop and didn't look up as Harry entered the cubicle.
You find my guy yet?
Not yet.
How's it looking?
Not very good. There are 911 variations of Chill in the moniker files, and that's just in California, so don't hold your breath.
Is that total, or is that just in the time frame I asked for?
The time frame doesn't matter. Your guy from 88 could have easily been put into the database in any year before or since. It would depend on whether he was arrested, was the subject of a field interview, or was a victim. There are a lot of possibilities. I have to look at all of them.
Chu was speaking in a clipped tone. Bosch knew he was still angry about being boxed out of the Irving investigation.
All of that might be true, but let's prioritize by narrowing the focus to, let's say, pre-92. My hunch is that if he's in the box, he went in before then.
Fine. Chu started typing. He still had not looked up or acknowledged Bosch with his eyes.
When I came in, I saw that the lieutenant's alone in her office. You could go talk to her about the transfer.
I want to get this done.
Bosch was calling Chu's bluff, and they both knew it.
Good.
Bosch's cell buzzed, and he saw it was an 818 call, the Valley. As he answered, he left the cubicle and headed out to the hallway so he could talk privately. As he suspected, it was Hannah Stone calling from one of her work lines.
I won't be able to meet you till about 8 because of some things here at work. Will that be all right?
Sure, that works.
It would only give him about 90 minutes with her, unless he changed his daughter's curfew.
Are you sure you sound...
No, it will work. I could work late, too. I've got stuff here. Where do you want to meet?
How about somewhere in the middle this time? Do you like sushi?
Not really. But I guess I could try it.
You mean you've never even tried sushi?
I sort of have a problem with raw fish. He didn't want to mention that it related to his experience in Vietnam. The rancid fish they would come across in the tunnels. The overpowering smell.
Okay, then scratch sushi. How about Italian?
Italian's good. Let's do Italian.
You know where Ca del Sol is in North Hollywood?
I can find it.
8 o'clock?
I'll be there.
See you soon, Harry.
See you soon.
Bosch ended the call and then made another he wanted to keep private as well. Heath Whitcomb had been a smoking pal from Harry's days in Hollywood Division. They had shared the ash can behind the station countless times until Bosch gave up the habit. Whitcomb was a patrol sergeant, and as such he was in a position to know Robert Mason, the patrol cop credited with all three of the B&W drunk driving arrests. He also still smoked.
"Busy, Harry," Whitcomb said as he answered. "What do you need?"
"Just call me next time you go out back." Bosch disconnected. As he pushed through the door back into the unit, Chu was pushing out.
"Harry, where have you been?"
"I went for a smoke."
"Harry, you don't smoke."
"Yeah, so what's up?"
"Chilton Hardy."
"You found him?"
"I think so. It fits."
They entered the cubicle, and Chu slid into a seat in front of his computer. Bosch leaned over his shoulder to see the screen. Chu hit the spacebar to rouse the computer from sleep. The screen lit, and on display was a mugshot photo of a white man about 30, with spiky dark hair and acne scars. He cast a sullen look at the camera, staring with cold blue eyes.
"Chilton Aaron Hardy," Chu said, "known as Chill."
"How old is this?" Bosch asked. "And where was it?"
1985, North Hollywood Division. Battery on a police officer. He was 28 at the time and lived in an apartment on Cahuenga in Toluca Lake. Toluca Lake was at the edge of Burbank and Griffith Park. Bosch knew it was very close to Traveltown, the place where Clayton Pell said he rode the trains when he was living with Chill. Bosch next did the math. Chilton Hardy would be 54 years old if he was still alive.
"Did you put it through DMV?
Chu had not. He switched screens and plugged Hardy's name into the state database containing the identities of the 24 million licensed drivers in California. Chu hit enter to begin the search, and they waited to see if Hardy was one of those drivers. Seconds ticked by, and Bosch expected a no-match return. As a general rule, people who get away with murder don't stick around.
"Bingo," Chu said.
Bosch leaned down and closer into the screen. There were two matches.
Chilton Aaron Hardy, age 77, and still licensed with an address down in Los Alamitos. And Chilton Aaron Hardy, Jr., age 54, of Woodland Hills, a suburb of Los Angeles. Topanga Canyon Boulevard, Bosch said, reading the address of the younger Hardy. He didn't go too far. Chu nodded. West Valley. Seems a little too easy. Why'd this guy hang around? Chu didn't answer because he knew Bosch was just thinking out loud. Let's see the photo, Bosch said. Chu pulled up the driver's license photo of Chilton Hardy, Jr. In the 26 years since his arrest in North Hollywood, he had lost most of his hair, and his skin had turned sallow. His face was lined by years of hard living, but the eyes were still the same, cold and unforgiving. Bosch looked at the photo for a long moment before speaking. All right, good work. Print it. We going up to see Mr. Hardy? Not yet. We go slow and deliberate on this one. Hardy's felt safe enough to stay in town all these years. We need to approach with preparation and caution. Print out both the old and new photos and make 2 6-packs. We're going up to Chopel? Yeah, and maybe take him for a little ride. While Chu got busy pulling mugshots and building the photo lineups, Bosch moved back to his desk. He was about to call Hannah Stone to inform her of their plan when a text came in from his daughter. I told Ashlyn's mom that you're on a hot case. She says I can stay over. Cool? Bosch thought for a long moment before responding. It was a school night, but Maddie had stayed with Ashlyn before on occasions when Bosch was traveling on cases. Ashlyn's mother was very accommodating and believed she was in some way helping the cause of justice by taking care of Maddie while Bosch pursued murderers. But he had to wonder if there wasn't something else at work here. Was his daughter clearing the way for him to be with Hannah? He almost called her, but stuck with the texting conversation because he didn't want Chu overhearing. Are you sure? I won't be that late. I could pick you up on my way home. She quickly answered that she was sure and wanted to stay over. She said they had gone by the house after school to pick up clothes. Bosch finally sent her back his approval. He then called Hannah to tell her she would be seeing him before 8 o'clock. She said that Bosch and Chu could use one of the counseling rooms to show Pell the photo lineups. What if we want to take Pell for a ride? Are there any rules about that? Where would you take him? We have an address. We think it's where he lived with his mother and this guy. I want to see if he recognizes the place. It's an apartment building. She was quiet for a moment, probably considering whether it was a good or bad thing for Pell to see the place where he was abused as a child. There are no rules, she finally said. He can leave the facility. But I think I should go, too. He could have a bad reaction. Maybe I should be there. I thought you had meetings. You have work till late. I just need to get my hours in. I came in late today because I thought I would have sessions tonight. We get audited on our hours. I don't want there to be ever an issue about my working a 6-hour day. Got it. Well, we should be there in about an hour. Will Pell be back from work? He's already back. We'll be ready for you. Does this change our dinner plans? Not on my end. I was looking forward to it. Good. Me too. Chapter 21. Bosch and Chu drove separately out to the valley so that they would not have to fight their way back downtown in rush hour traffic after the excursion. Chu could simply head east on the 134 freeway to his home in Pasadena, and Bosch could remain in the valley until his dinner with Hannah Stone. On the way up on the 101 freeway, Bosch finally heard back from Whitcomb of Hollywood Division Patrol. Sorry, Harry, I was in the middle of something, and then I just sort of forgot to call you back. What can I do you for? You know a P3 in the station named Robert Mason?
Bobby Mason, yeah, I know him. But he's nights and I'm days, so I don't know him that well, if you know what I mean. What's up with him?
I'm looking at some arrests he's made that have something to do with something I'm working, and I need to talk to him about it.
You're working the Chateau case with Irvin Irving's kid, right?
It sounded odd to Bosch to call George Irving a kid.
That's right. What kind of arrests are we talking about?
Three deuces.
What do three deuces have to do with the Chateau?
Bosch was silent for a moment, hoping the hesitation would send a message to Whitcomb that he was seeking information, not looking to distribute it.
It's just an angle, he finally said. What have you heard about Mason? Is he doing okay?
Bosch was largely talking in code, trying to find out if Mason had a reputation, one way or the other, in terms of being bent or corrupt in any way.
What I heard was that he was upset yesterday, Whitcomb said.
About what?
About the Chateau. I guess he was old pals with the councilman's son. I heard they were in the same academy class, even.
Bosch moved his car into the exit lane for Lancashire Boulevard. The plan was to pick up Chu in the commuter lot next to the Metrolink station in Studio City. He played it cool with Whitcomb, not wanting to reveal the importance of things.
Yeah, I heard they knew each other back then, he said.
Looks that way, Whitcomb said. But that's all I know, Harry. Like I said, Mason's nights and I'm days.
Speaking of which, I'm just about out of here. You got anything else?
This was Whitcomb's way of saying he didn't want to get further involved in discussions about a fellow cop. Bosch didn't really blame him.
Yeah, you know which basic Mason usually works?
Hollywood Division was geographically broken into 8 basic car areas or patrol zones.
I can look it up here pretty quick. I'm in the watch office.
Bosch waited, and Whitcomb quickly came back.
This deployment, he's in 6 Adams 65, so I'd say that's where he usually works.
A deployment period was 28 days. The first 6 was for the Hollywood Division designation. Adam meant patrol unit, and 65 was the zone. Bosch couldn't remember the geographic delineations in Hollywood Division, but he took a flyer. 65, is that the La Brea corridor?
You got it, Harry.
Bosch asked Whitcomb to keep their conversation private, thanked him, and ended the call. Harry considered things and saw that Irvin Irving had an out. If Mason was pulling over B&W drivers in an effort to help tilt the franchise toward Regent, then he could be doing it solely at the request of his former friend and academy classmate, George Irving. It would be hard to prove that Councilman Irvin Irving had anything to do with it. Bosch pulled into the commuter lot and circled, looking for his partner. When it became apparent that he had arrived ahead of Chu, he pulled to a stop in the main lane and waited. Palm on the wheel, he drummed his fingers on the dashboard and realized he was disappointed by the acknowledgement that Irvin Irving's actions may not have precipitated his son's death. If the councilman were ever accused of selling his influence on the taxi franchise decision, Bosch had already found the makings of reasonable doubt. Irving could argue that the whole scheme was cooked up and carried out by his dead son, and Bosch didn't think he would be above doing that. He lowered the car window to let in some fresh air. To rid himself of his unease, he jumped over to the other case and started thinking about Clayton Pell and how they were going to handle him. He then thought about Chilton Hardy and realized that he did not want to put off possibly getting a look at the man who was the ultimate target of the Lily Price investigation. The passenger door opened and Chu slipped into the seat. Bosch had been so absorbed in his thoughts that he had not seen him enter the lot in his Miata and park.
Okay, Harry.
Okay. Hey, I changed my mind about going to Woodland Hills. I want to ski Hardy's place. Maybe even get a look at him, if we're lucky.
Ski?
As in schematic. I want to see the lay of the land for when we do come back for real. We'll do that and then come back to Pell. That all right with you?
I'm good.
Bosch left the lot and drove back to the 101. Traffic was heavy going west to Woodland Hills. 20 minutes later, he exited on Topanga Canyon Boulevard and headed north. The DMV address for Chilton Hardy was a two-story apartment building a half-mile north of the big mall that anchored the West Valley. The apartment complex was large, running from sidewalk to back alley with an underground parking garage. After driving by it front and back, Bosch parked at the curb out front, and he and Chu got out. Assessing the address, Bosch was struck by a familiarity he couldn't place. The complex had gray siding and white trim for a Cape Cod look with navy and white striped awnings over the windows on the front side.
"You recognize this place?" Bosch asked.
Chu studied the building for a moment.
"No, should I?"
Bosch didn't answer. He walked to the security gate, where there was a call box. The names of the building's 48 tenants were listed along with their apartment numbers. Bosch scanned the list and didn't see Chilton Hardy's name. According to the DMV computer, Hardy was supposed to be living in apartment 23. The name next to 23 was Phillips. Again, Bosch was hit with a feeling of déjà vu. Had he been here before?
"What do you think?" Chu asked.
"When was the driver's license issued?"
2 years ago.
He could have been here then. He could have come and gone.
Or never been here.
Yeah, he picks a random address to hide his trail.
Maybe not so random.
Bosch turned around and looked about as he considered whether to risk exploring this further and possibly alerting Hardy, if he was here, that he had drawn the attention of the police. He saw the sign planted near the curb. Arcade Luxury Apartments. Apartment for rent. Two bedroom, two bath. First month free. Inquire within. Bosch decided he would not call apartment 23 yet. Instead, he punched the number 1 into the call box. It was listed as manager.
Yes?
We're here to look at the apartment for rent.
You must have appointment.
Bosch looked at the call box and for the first time saw the camera lens next to the speaker. He realized the manager was probably looking at him and didn't like the vibe he was getting.
We're here now. Do you want to rent it or not?
Must have appointment. Sorry.
Fuck it, Bosch thought. Open up, it's the police.
He pulled his badge and held it up to the camera. A moment later, the security gate buzzed, and Bosch pushed through. The gate led to a central area where there was a bank of mailboxes and a bulletin board with notices about the complex. Almost immediately, they were approached by a small, dark man of what appeared to be South Asian descent.
"Paris," he said. "How can I do for you?"
Bosch identified himself and Chu, and the man introduced himself as Irfan Khan and said he was the manager. Bosch told him they were conducting an investigation in the area and were looking for a man who may have been the victim of a crime.
"What crime?" Khan asked.
"We can't tell you that at the moment," Bosch said. "We need to simply know if this is where the man lives."
"What is his name?"
"Chilton Hardy. He may use the name Chill."
"No, not here."
"You sure, Mr. Khan?"
"Yes, sure. I am manage building. He not here."
"Take a look at a picture of him."
"Okay, you short."
Chu pulled out a photo from Hardy's current driver's license and showed Khan. He looked at it for a good 5 seconds and then shook his head.
"See, I tell you, this man not here."
"Yeah, I got it, this man out here.
How about you, Mr. Khan? How long have you been here?"
"I work here 3 years now. I do a very good job."
"And this guy never lived here? What about 2 years ago?"
"No, I remember him, if he live."
Bosch nodded. "Okay, Mr. Khan. Thank you for your cooperation."
"I cooperate fully."
"Yes, sir." Bosch turned and headed back toward the gate. Chu followed. When they got back to the car, Bosch looked over the car roof at the building for a long moment before ducking into the driver's seat.
"Do you believe him?" Chu asked.
"Yeah," Bosch said, "I guess I do."
"So then what do you think?"
"I think we're missing something. Let's go see Clayton Pell." He turned the car on and pulled away from the curb. As he steered back toward the freeway, he had the navy and white striped awnings in his mind's eye.
Chapter 22. It was one of the few times he let Chu drive. Bosch was in the back seat with Clayton Pell. He wanted to be close to him in case of a violent reaction. When Pell had seen the photo lineups earlier and picked Chilton Hardy's photo out each time, he had disappeared behind a wall of controlled rage. Bosch could sense it, and he wanted to be close in case he had to do something about it. Hannah Stone rode in the front passenger seat, and from his position, Bosch could watch both Pell and her. Stone had a concerned look on her face. The reopening of Pell's old wounds was clearly weighing on her. Bosch and Chu had choreographed a drive before arriving at the Buena Vista to meet with Pell. From the halfway center, they first drove to Traveltown and Griffith Park so that they could begin the tour with Pell seeing what appeared to be one of the places of good memories of his young life. Pell wanted to get out and watch the trains, but Bosch said no, they were on a timetable. The truth was that he didn't want to allow Pell to watch the children on the train rides. Now Chu turned right onto Cahuenga and started heading north toward the address they had traced Chilton Hardy to during the time period Pell lived with him. By the prearranged plan, they would not point out the apartment building to Pell. They would simply see if he recognized it on his own. When they were two blocks away, Pell showed the first stirring of recognition.
"Yes, this is where we lived. I thought that place was a school and I wanted to go there."
He pointed out the window at a private daycare center that had a swing set in front behind a wire fence. Bosch could understand how an 8-year-old boy might think it was a school. They were coming up to the apartment building now. It was on Pell's side. Chu took his foot off the gas pedal and started to coast, which Bosch thought was a giveaway. But they went right by the address without a word from Pell. It wasn't a case catastrophe, but Bosch was disappointed. He was thinking in terms of a prosecution. If he was able to testify that Pell pointed out the apartment building without any help, that would bolster Pell's story. If they had to specifically point the place out to Pell, a defense attorney would be able to contend that Pell was manipulating the police and creating his testimony out of a revenge fantasy.
"Anything yet?" Bosch asked.
"Yeah, I think we might have just passed it, but I'm not sure."
"You want us to turn around?"
"Is that all right?"
"Sure. Which side were you looking at?"
"My side."
Bosch nodded. Now things were looking good.
"Detective Chu," he said,
"rather than turn around, let's go right and go around so it's on Clayton's side again."
"Got it."
Chu turned right at the next block, then took his first right and drove three blocks down. He then turned right and came back to Cahuenga at the corner where the daycare center was. He turned right again, and they were only a block and a half from the address.
"Yeah, right up here," Pell said.
Chu drove well below the speed limit. A car blasted its horn from behind and then passed. Everyone in the police car ignored it.
"This is it,"
Pell said.
"I think."
Chu pulled to the curb. It was the right address. Everyone was silent while Pell looked out the window at the Camelot Apartments. It was a two-story stucco affair with rounded faux turrets at the two front corners. It was typical of the urban blight apartments that sprouted in the city in the boom times of the 50s. They were designed and built to last 30 years and were going on twice that now. The stucco was cracked and discolored, the roofline was no longer straight,
and the flap of a blue plastic tarp was tied over the top of one of the turrets as a makeshift remedy for a leaking roof.
It was nicer back then, Pell said.
Are you sure it's the right place? Bosch asked.
Yeah, this is it. I remember it sort of looking like a castle, and I was excited about living here. Except I didn't know.
His voice trailed off, and he just looked at the building. He had turned halfway in his seat, so his back was to Bosch. Harry saw Pell lean his forehead against the window. His shoulders then began to shake, and there was a low sound, almost like a whistle, as he began to cry. Bosch raised a hand and reached over to Pell's shoulder, but then he stopped. He hesitated and pulled his hand back. Stone had been turning in her seat, and she saw the move. In that split second, Bosch saw her disgust with him. Clayton, she said, it's all right. It's good to see this, to confront the past head on. She reached over the seat and put her hand on Pell's shoulder, doing what Bosch could not. She didn't look at Bosch again. It's all right, she said again.
I hope you catch the fucking bastard,
Pell said, his voice strangled with emotion. Don't worry, Bosch said, we will.
I hope he dies. I hope he puts up a fight and you kill his ass.
Come on, Clayton, Stone said. Let's not think about those kind of... He slapped her hand off his shoulder.
I want him to die!
No, Clayton.
Yes! Look at me and where I am. It's all because of him.
Stone turned back in her seat and sat down. I think Clayton has been through enough here, she said in a clipped tone. Can we go back now? Bosch reached forward and tapped Chu on the shoulder. Let's go, he said. Chu pulled away from the curb and headed north. The car was silent the whole way back, and it was dark by the time they got back to the Buena Vista. Chu stayed in the car while Bosch walked Pell and Stone to the front gate. Clayton, thank you, Bosch said as Stone used her key to open the passage. I know that was tough on you. I appreciate your willingness to do it. It's going to help the case.
Doesn't matter if you have a case. You going to catch him?
Bosch hesitated and then nodded. I think so. We still have some work to do, but we'll get it done and then we'll go find him. I promise you that. Pell walked through the open gate without another word. Clayton, you should go to the kitchen and see if there's dinner, Stone instructed. Pell raised a hand and waved, indicating he had heard her, as he walked off into the center courtyard. Stone turned to close the gate, but Bosch was standing there. She looked up at him, and Harry could read the disappointment. I guess we're not having dinner, he said.
Why not? Your daughter?
No, she's at her friend's. But I just thought... I mean, I'm fine to have dinner. I just need to take my partner to his car in Studio City. You still want to meet at the restaurant?
Sure, but let's not wait till 8. After that ride, I think I'm finished for the day.
All right. I'll drop Chu off and then head over there and meet you. That okay, or do you want me to come back here?
No, I'll meet you there. Perfect.
Chapter 23. They got into the restaurant more than a half hour before their reservation time and were given a quiet booth in a back room near a fireplace. They ordered pastas and a Chianti Hannah chose. Through the dinner, the food was good and the talk small, until Stone put Bosch directly on the spot.
Harry, why couldn't you comfort Clayton in the car today? I saw you. You couldn't touch him.
Bosch took a long drink of wine before attempting an answer. I just didn't think he wanted to be touched. He was upset. She shook her head.
No, Harry, I saw. And I need to know why a man like you cannot have any sympathy for a man like him. I need to know that before anything could move forward between you and me.
Bosch looked down at his plate. He put his fork down. He felt tense. He had met this woman only 2 days ago, yet he couldn't deny his attraction to her, or that some sort of connection had been established. He didn't want to spoil this chance, but he didn't know what to say. "Life is too short, Harry," she said. "I can't waste my time, and I can't be with someone who doesn't understand what I do and have a basic human compassion for people who are victims." He finally found his voice. "I have compassion. My job is to speak for victims like Lily Price. But what about Pell's victims? He's damaged people as badly as he has been damaged. Am I supposed to pat him on the back and say, 'They're there, it's going to be okay'? It's not okay now, and it's never going to be okay. And the thing is, he knows it." He made an open palms gesture as if to say, "This is me. This is the truth." "Harry, do you believe there is evil in the world?" "Of course I wouldn't have a job if there wasn't."
"Where does it come from?"
"What are you talking about?"
"Your job. You confront evil almost every day. Where does it come from? How do people become evil? Is it in the air? Do you catch it like you catch a cold?"
"Don't patronize me. It's a little more complicated than that. You know that."
"I'm not patronizing you. I'm trying to figure out how you think so that I can make a decision."
"I like you, Harry, a lot. Everything I've seen I like, except what you did in the back seat of that car today. I don't want to start something only to find out I was wrong about you." "So, what's this, like a job interview?"
"No, it's me trying to get to know you."
"It's too much like those speed dating things they have. You want to know everything before anything even happens. There's something else here you're not telling me." She didn't respond right away, and that told Bosch he had hit on something. "Hannah, what is it?" She ignored his question and insisted on her own.
"Harry, where does evil come from?"
Bosch laughed and shook his head. "This is not what people talk about when they are trying to get to know each other."
"Why do you care what I think about that?"
"Because I just do."
"What's your answer?"
He could see the seriousness in her eyes. This was important to her. "Look, all I can tell you is that nobody knows where it comes from, okay? It's just out there, and it is responsible for truly awful things. And my job is to find it and take it out of the world. I don't need to know where it comes from to do that." She composed her thoughts before responding.
"Well said, Harry, but not good enough. You've been at this for a long time. From time to time, you must have thought about where the darkness in people comes from. How does the heart turn black?"
"Is this the nature versus nurture discussion? Because I..."
"Yes, it is. How do you vote?"
Bosch wanted to smile, but somehow knew it would not be received well. "I don't vote because it doesn't..."
"No, you have to vote. You really do. I want to know."
She was leaning across the table, talking to him in an urgent whisper. She leaned back as the waiter came to the table and started to clear their plates. Bosch welcomed the interruption because it gave him time to think. They ordered coffee, but no dessert. Once the waiter was gone, it was time. "Okay, what I think is that certainly evil can be nurtured. No doubt that is what happened with Clayton Pell. But for every Pell who acts out and damages somebody, there is someone who has had the exact same childhood who never acts out and never hurts anybody. So there is something else, another part to the equation. Are people born with something that lies dormant and only comes to the surface under certain circumstances?
I don't know, Hannah. I really don't.
And I don't think anybody else does either. Not for sure. We only have theories. And none of it really matters in the long run because it's not going to stop the damage."
"You mean my work is useless?"
"No. But your work, like mine, comes into play after the damage is done. Sure, your efforts will hopefully prevent a lot of these people from going out and doing it again. I do believe that, and I told you so last night. But how is it going to identify and stop the individual who has never acted out or broken a law or done anything before that warns of what's to come? Why are we even talking about this, Hannah? Tell me what you're not telling me. The waiter came back with the coffee. Hannah told him to bring their check. Bosch took this as a bad sign. She wanted to get away from him. She wanted to go. So, that's it? We get the check and you run away without answering the question? No, Harry, that's not it. I asked for the check because I want you to take me home with you now. But there's something you need to know about me first. Then tell me. I have a son, Harry.
I know. You said he's up in the Bay Area.
Yes, I go up there to visit him in prison. He's in San Quentin. Bosch couldn't say he hadn't expected a secret like this, but he hadn't expected it to be her son. Maybe a former husband or partner, but not her son. I'm sorry, Hannah. It was all he could think to say. She shook her head as if to ward off his sympathy. He did something terrible, she said. Something evil. And to this day, I can't fathom where it came from or why. Holding the bottle of wine under his arm, Bosch unlocked the front door and held it open for her. He was acting calm, but he wasn't. They had talked about her son for almost another hour. Bosch had mostly listened, but in the end all he could do was once more offer her sympathy. Are parents responsible for the sins of their children? Often, yes, but not always. She was the therapist. She knew that better than he. He hit the light switch next to the door. Why don't we have a glass on the back deck? He said. That sounds lovely, she said. He walked her through the living room to the sliding door to the deck. This is a great place, Harry. How long have you lived here?
I guess it's almost 25 years. It just hasn't seemed that long.
I rebuilt it once, after the earthquake in 1994. They were greeted by the hissing sound of the freeway from down at the bottom of the pass. In their exposed position on the deck, the wind was crisp. Hannah walked right out to the rail and took in the view. Wow! She made a full turn, her eyes toward the sky. Where is the moon? Bosch pointed toward Mount Fleming.
It must be behind the mountain.
I hope it comes out. Bosch held the bottle up by its neck. He had bought it from the restaurant because he knew he had nothing at home. He had stopped drinking at home since Madeline had started living with him. I'm going to go open this and turn on some music. I'll be right back. Back inside, he turned on the DVD player but wasn't sure what was in the slot. Soon he heard Frank Morgan's saxophone, and he knew all was good. He quickly moved down the hallway and did a quick cleanup of his bedroom and bathroom, grabbing fresh sheets from the closet and making the bed. He then went into the kitchen to open the wine. He carried two glasses and the bottle back out to the deck. I was wondering what happened to you, Hannah said.
I had to straighten up at least a little bit, he said.
They touched glasses and sipped, and then Hannah moved close to him, and they kissed for the first time. They held it until Hannah broke away from him and put her hand over his mouth. I'm sorry to have put you through all of that, Harry. My soap opera. Bosch shook his head. It's not a soap opera. He's your son. Our children are our hearts. Our children are our hearts. That's nice. Who said that?
I don't know. Me, I guess.
She smiled. It doesn't sound like something a hard-boiled detective would say. Bosch shrugged.
Maybe I'm not.
I live with a 15-year-old girl. I think she keeps me soft. Have I put you off by being so forward tonight? Bosch smiled and shook his head.
I like what you said about not wasting time.
We both felt the connection last night. So here we are. If it's right, then I don't want to waste time either. She put her glass down on the railing and moved closer to him. Yes, here we are. Bosch put his glass down next to hers. He then stepped into her and put his hand on the back of her neck. He moved even closer and kissed her, using his other hand to hold her body tightly against his. Eventually she slipped her lips off of his, and they stood cheek to cheek. He felt her hand go inside his jacket and up his side.
"Forget about the moon and the wine," she whispered. "I want to go inside now."
"Me too," he said. Chapter 24. At 10:30 p.m., Bosch drove Hannah Stone back down the hill to her car, which they had left in the valet lot at Cas del Sol. She had told him she could not spend the night, and he was okay about that. While waiting for the valet to bring her car, they held each other in a long embrace. Bosch felt good. The time with her in his bedroom had been wonderful. He had waited a long time for someone like Hannah.
"Call me when you get home, okay?"
"I'll be all right."
"I know, but call me anyway. I want to know you're home safe."
"Okay." They looked at each other for a long moment. The valet pulled up. "I had a nice time, Harry. I hope you did, too."
"You know it."
"Good. I want to do it again."
He smiled. "Yeah, me too."
She broke away and went to her car. She tipped the valet with a $5 Bosch had given her, and then looked at Harry over the car roof before getting in. "Soon," she said.
He nodded.
They smiled. And she got in the car and drove off. Bosch pulled into the rear lot of Hollywood Division and parked in the first slot he found open. He hoped he was not too late. He got out and walked toward the back door of the station. His phone buzzed and he pulled it from his pocket. It was Hannah.
"You're home?"
"Made it. Where are you?"
"Hollywood Division. I need to see somebody on PM watch."
"So that's why you pushed me out the door."
Actually, I think you were the one who said you needed to go."
"Oh, well, then okay. Have fun."
"It's work. I'll call you tomorrow."
Bosch walked through the double doors and down the hall to the watch office. There were two custodies cuffed to the bench that ran down the middle of the hall. They were waiting to be processed into the jail. They looked like a couple of Hollywood hustlers who came up short on the hustle.
"Hey, man, you help me out?"
one of them asked as Bosch went by.
"Not tonight," Bosch replied.
Bosch ducked his head into the watch office. There were two sergeants standing side by side, looking at the deployment chart for AM watch. No lieutenant. This told Bosch that the next shift was still upstairs in roll call, and he hadn't missed the shift change. He knocked on the glass window next to the door. Both sergeants turned to him. "Bosch, RHD, can you call Adam 65 in? I need 10 minutes with him."
"He's already on the way. He's first in."
They staggered the shift change, one car at a time, so the division would not be left with no one on patrol. Usually the first in was the car containing the most senior officer or the patrol team that had had the toughest night.
"You think you can send him over to detectives? I'll wait over there."
"You got it."
Bosch walked past the custodies and then took a left down the back hallway, past the kit room and into the detective squad room. He had worked in Hollywood Division for many years before his RHD assignment and knew the station well. As expected, the D Bureau was deserted. At most, Bosch thought he might find a patrol officer writing up his reports, but there wasn't anyone in the room at all. There were wooden signs hanging from the ceiling above the pods for the different crime units. Bosch went over to the homicide pod and looked for his old partner Jerry Edgar's desk. He identified it because of a photo taped to the back of the cubicle of Edgar with Tommy Lasorda, the former manager of the Dodgers. Bosch sat down and tried the pen drawer, but found it unlocked. This gave him an idea, and he quickly stood back up and scanned all the desks and counters in the squad room until he saw a stack of newspapers on a break table near the front of the room. He walked over and looked through the stack until he found the sports section. He then leafed through it until he found one of the ubiquitous advertisements for pharmaceutical treatment of erectile dysfunction. He tore the ad out and then went back to Edgar's desk. Bosch had just finished slipping the ad through the crack above Edgar's locked desk drawer when a voice surprised him from behind.
RHD?
Bosch swiveled around on Edgar's chair. A uniformed cop was standing by the entrance from the back hallway. He had gray, close-cropped hair and a muscular build. He was in his mid-40s, but looked younger, even with the gray hair.
Yeah, that's me.
Robert Mason?
That's me.
What is...
Come on over here so we can talk, Officer Mason.
Mason came over. Bosch noticed that his short sleeves were tight on his biceps. He was the breed of cop who wanted any potential challengers to see the guns and know what they would be up against.
Have a seat, Bosch said.
No, thanks, Mason said. What's going on? I am EOW, and I want to get out of here.
Three deuces.
What?
You heard me. Three deuces.
Bosch was watching his eyes, looking for any sort of tell.
Okay, three deuces. You got me. What does it mean?
It means there are no coincidences, Mason.
And you writing up three deuces last summer on three different B&W taxi drivers, all in Adam 65, stretches the limits of possible coincidence.
My name isn't RHD. It's Bosch, and I'm investigating the murder of your buddy, George Irving.
Now he saw the tell, but it came and went. Mason was about to make a bad choice, but when he did, Bosch was still surprised. George Irving was a suicide.
Bosch looked at him for a moment. Really? You know that?
I know it's the only way it could have happened. Him going there, to that hotel? He killed himself, and it had nothing to do with black and white. You're barking up the wrong tree, dog.
Bosch started to get annoyed with this arrogant asshole. Let's cut the bullshit, Mason. You've got a choice here. You can take a seat and tell me what you did and who told you to do it, and maybe you'll get out of this okay. Or you can stand there and keep spinning bullshit, and then I won't really care what happens to you. Mason folded his arms across his thick chest. He was going to turn this into a mano battle of who backs down first, and it wasn't a game where big biceps gave you the edge. He was ultimately going to lose.
I don't want to sit down. I have no involvement in this case other than I knew the guy who jumped. That's it.
Then tell me about the three deuces.
I don't have to tell you shit.
Bosch nodded. You're right, you don't.
He stood up and glanced back at Edgar's desk to make sure he hadn't left anything out of place. He then took a step toward Mason and pointed at his chest.
Remember this moment, because this was the moment you blew it, dog. This was the moment you could have saved your job, but instead you gave it away. You're not EOW. You just put the P in front of it. Permanent end of watch.
Bosch headed toward the back hallway. He knew he was a walking contradiction. A guy who on Monday morning said he wouldn't investigate cops, and now here he was. He was going to burn this cop in order to get the truth of George Irving.
Hey, wait!
Bosch stopped and turned back. Mason lowered his arms, and Bosch read it as a dropping of his guard.
I did nothing wrong. I responded to a direct request from a member of the city council. It was not a request involving specific action. It was no more than an alert, and we get them passed on to us in roll call every day, every shift. RFCs, requests from council, we call them. I did nothing wrong, and if you burn me, you're burning the wrong guy.
Bosch waited without moving, but that was it. He moved back toward Mason. He pointed to a chair. Sit down. This time Mason did take a seat, pulling one away from the robbery module. Bosch returned to Edgar's chair, and they sat facing each other in the aisle between robbery and homicide.
So tell me about this request from counsel. I knew George Irving a long time. The academy, we were rookies together. Even after he left for law school, we stayed close. I was best man at his wedding. Hell, I was the one who rented the honeymoon suite for them.
He reached out and gestured behind him in the direction of the squad lieutenant's office, as if that were the honeymoon suite.
We did birthdays, 4th of July's, and I knew his father through him and saw him at a lot of these things over the years.
Okay.
So last summer in June, I forget the exact date, I went to a party for George's kid. Chad. Yeah, Chad. Chad had just graduated from high school and was valedictorian and was going on a full ride up to USF. So they had a party for him, and I went with Sandy, my wife. The councilman was there, and we talked, mostly bullshit about the department and him trying to justify to me why the council fucked us on OT and things like that. Then at the end, he told me sort of, oh, by the way, that he got a complaint from a constituent who said she got in a cab outside a restaurant in Hollywood, and the driver was drunk. She said the car stunk like a brewery, and he was clearly impaired. She said that after a few blocks, the lady had to tell the guy to pull over, and she got out. She said it was a black and white taxi, and so he told me to keep an eye on the taxi drivers, that there could be a problem. He knew I worked PM watch, and I might see something. And that was it. No conspiracy, no bullshit. I reacted to that when I was on patrol, and there was nothing wrong with it at the time. And every case I made on those drivers was righteous.
Bosch nodded. If it was a true story, Mason had done nothing wrong. But his story brought Irvin Irving solidly back into the picture. The question for the district attorney, or even a grand jury, would be about the councilman. Was he subtly using his influence to help benefit his son's client, or was he motivated by concerns for public safety? There was a fine line, and Bosch doubted the question would ever get so far as a grand jury. Irving was too smart. Still, Bosch was intrigued by what Mason had tagged to the end of his story. There was nothing wrong with the chain of events at that time.
Did the councilman tell you when this complaint came in, or exactly how it got to him?
No, he did not.
Did this sort of alert ever come up in a roll call over the summer?
Not that I remember, but I probably wouldn't know, to tell you the truth. I've been around. I've got years, and I'm allowed certain indulgences, I guess you might call it. I usually roll in first on shift change. I get priority vacation dibs, shit like that. I miss a lot of roll calls. I've been to too many, and I can't stand sitting up there in that little room and listening to the same thing night after night. But my partner, who's a rookie, never misses, and he tells me what I need to know. So this RFC could have come up. I just wasn't there.
But your partner never told you it came up, right?
No, but we were already on it, so he wouldn't have to. First deployment after that party, I started pulling over taxis. So he wouldn't have to tell me if it came up in roll call. See what I mean?
I do.
Bosch pulled out his notebook and flipped it open. There was nothing written on the pages concerning Mason, but he wanted time to collect his thoughts and consider what to ask next. He started flipping through his pages of notes.
Nice, Mason said. That's your number on the badge?
He pointed to the notebook.
Yeah.
Where do you get something like that?
Hong Kong.
Did you know that your friend George Irving was repping a taxi company that was hoping to take the franchise away from black and white? Did you know that the DUI